At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust. In this week's podcast, I'm joined by Lara Rebecca. Lara and I had never met, and we had spoken a little bit on WhatsApp. But honestly, this podcast, it's like we've known each other for years. It was such an amazing podcast to do and reflect on Lara's journey of self-discovery following her eating disorder. And it was so nice for me to hear, as somebody that is going through my own recovery journey, to hear about the life that she now leads and the identity that she now has away from her eating disorder. I really hope that you enjoy this conversation. And honestly, I know it sounds really silly, but whether you're wandering, going for a walk in the sunshine, or sitting, drinking a cup of tea, eating some biscuits, I just really hope that this episode you feel like you're sat down with two friends, because I genuinely felt like I was just having a catch up with one of my friends, and there was lots of giggles and hopes for the future. And it was a really lovely episode to record.
Hello. How are you doing? Oh, I'm so happy to finally be talking to you.
It's so nice to finally meet you. I feel like I already know you, which probably sounds really weird, but I feel like I've
been romanticizing Full of Beans podcast for like so long. It's like you're the cream of the crop in this like region. It's just like,
oh god, no, I feel exactly the same about you. And because like, you know George, and I know George, and like, just feel like I already know you. And yeah, it's so nice to
actually
speak to
you. I met him through the most, I think it was, I went to do a talk. I was invited up to King's College London to do a talk. And then we met through that. So the fact that through that relationships, that's formed, that's like, I love how these things just like domino down and almost like come back, like a book that I've been a part of, he's also a part of too, but we never knew that we were both a part of. And it's just like these, it's so cool to how like we've got a small little niche community, but it's lovely too.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing. Like sometimes I'm like, oh, it's such a small world that you know, blah, blah, and I know, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, it's not actually that much of a small world because it's quite a niche community.
It definitely is, but we support each other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. But honestly, it's so nice. The book, is that Chuck's book?
Yes. Yeah, yes. It's actually been in the making for over like 2.5 to 3 years. Like it took a while to find a publisher and things. Yeah. So I finished a degree and started a degree and bought a house in that time.
Oh my
time.
God. Brilliant. I love that. Yeah, I imagine like it's a massive weight off your shoulder as well to be able to speak about it, because I feel like it's been a secret.
But... yeah, like I think over the past year, because it's like, oh, it's never going to happen. You kind of forget about it. So when Chuck's messaged me a few days back, it's like, it's happening. I'm like, and he said, the launch is on Thursday. I was like, oh, wow, okay, fine. Okay, I'll prepare some captions ready, because I want to shout all about it. So it's just so exciting to know that it's actually happening. And like Diane Buswell's doing it. How cool is that?
I know. Yeah, like when I saw it, I was like, there are.
And Nigel Owen. Oh, we're recording. Oh, no.
No, it's totally fine. The only reason I did it, I said this to somebody the other day, is because what I found what happened was I would be chit-chatting like we are now, like, you know, loads
Very
of energy,
true.
Like really excited.
There's hidden gems in this bit.
And then I'd go, right, I'm going to press record, and people just froze. And then they're like, oh my God, we're now talking. And then they just like transform into this different person. I'm like, whoa, where's that person just gone? So the reason I do it is just so that like,
just constantly.
Nah, I'm going to take that advice. There's also, I'm going to have to prod your brain after this as well, because I need suggestions. I need help.
I'm happy to. Yeah, happy to help.
Podcasting cues.
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah,
after 3.5 years, I'll start trying to make this a bit more progressive.
Oh no, honestly, better late than ever. I keep having all these brilliant ideas, and then I'm like, oh, I don't have time for that in my life, and I'm like, I'm just gonna do what I'm doing right now. I think it's
The same with like video and short form content and like how much that takes
video.
So ages. Like,
that's why
it's the way that people like, that's how, you know, you think of Stephen Bartlett and CVO, and everyone's got this thing with captions. I'm just like, I am one person juggling a degree and two jobs.
Exactly.
And as much as I'd love, because I know I could see how it progresses, one, I don't want to oversaturate my Instagram because I feel like I've already got like so many different things happening that already. But then all the work, and I'm just like, do I just leave it in its corner? I'm like, just leave it in its corner. Like, don't give yourself too much pressure, love.
Exactly. Like, it's when it's doing like really well anyway, and people are getting what they're getting from it. Like, there's no point in burning yourself out, which I think for me, like,
we're
I'm
all
now
very
in a-
good at.
Oh yes, absolutely. I mean, that is the perk of having eating disorder characteristics, isn't it?
Oh gosh, perfectionism and all sorts.
Which, on the note of that, I'm aware you have to go at 7:30. So,
oh no. So I'm absolutely fine now. I got dumped.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's fine.
Oh, like
just
actually,
keep that bit in.
Actually dumped. Like,
well, it wasn't like a formal relationship to begin with, but. Yeah, no, it's fine. Like, I'm actually quite relieved.
Okay, that's good.
Because I took initiative the first time and I was kind to myself, and rather than giving him the power and the control like I always do, I stood up for myself. And this was like an hour ago. So.
Oh, this is fresh.
Okay. Fresh off the press.
You heard it here first.
Oh, fine. I'll stop rambling out about failed relationship history.
It's totally fine. If I'm a little bit over, it's fine. But yeah, I've got board games tonight. So
what are your favourites?
Well, see, this is the problem. So I like simple games. I like Connect Four and things like that. But the friends that I am hanging out with are...
There's an end point to those as well. It's not like Monopoly that takes a lifetime.
Short, you can talk while you're doing it. The friends I'm hanging out with like they're D&Ders, so they like intense board games of like hours.
That's, yeah, I think
so.
I'm
we'll
with
see
you
how
that.
Long I last.
I'm a hybrid. I'm in the middle.
Yeah, my thing is I don't like learning new games, but once I get the hang of it, I'm then like super into it.
Yeah, because it's threatening. It's that learning. Unfamiliarity. Perceived incompetence. It all comes back to that, doesn't it?
Oh yeah. Well, it's all sounding very familiar. Anyway, right, to the topic of today. I don't even know how to start this because I feel like we've started it but haven't started it. So tell us something about yourself. Oh, let's do that. I've never done that before. That's a really rogue way to start it. Who are you and why are you here?
Oh, wow. I'm somebody that colour codes the bookshelves, which is true.
You can see my shit behind me that I do not have that.
My name is Lara Rebecca. I am a mental health and eating disorder awareness advocate based in South Wales. I'm fluent Welsh, so I've been able to do my advocacy work bilingually, which has been really lovely. This was all inspired by my previous experiences with some anxiety, depression, which then developed into anorexia nervosa through, you know, years of disorder tendencies just amalgamated, unfortunately. And this was just my opportunity to kind of change the narrative a little bit. I definitely want to educate and be raw and honest about my experiences, but I don't want there always to be an association of doom and gloom and heaviness. I want to educate, raise awareness, spread a kind of a concept of hope, and use my experiences to hopefully facilitate others and not it just be a "woe is you" kind of situation. You know, it wasn't easy, as you definitely know. They strip years away from you. You know, your identity gets engulfed in this illness, and relationships fail, and life goes a different direction than what you thought it would initially. But as time progresses, as recovery becomes more authentic, as you find yourself outside of that eating disorder label, you know, that hope and that freedom and that ability to reconnect with the world and re-identify yourself. It's so like intoxicating and exciting. So you want to share it. You want to share that things are good now. So yeah, I just try to raise awareness through, I do a lot of media work and work with BBC and ITV, but also through my own podcast and just ramble my way through life, basically, whilst eating a lot of peanut butter.
I love that. What do? I ramble Crunchy. My way through life and eat peanut butter. That sounds like a great way to live, not gonna lie. And I really like what you were saying there in the fact that, like, you know, when we do speak about eating disorders, it can be, you know, they're crap and they do like ruin people's lives whilst they're there, but they don't have to be a permanent feature of somebody's life. And that's why I think it's so nice that people are able to reflect on their journey and then say, like, this is where I'm at now and this is what I'm doing now, and, you know, this all this amazing stuff that, yes, some of it's eating sort of related and I'm doing this advocacy stuff and, like, I'm raising awareness, but I'm also, like, living my life. Like you said, you've bought a house, you're doing a degree, like, you're doing so much more, I'm sure, as well as that.
Yeah, I think it's important to know where the line is, because you don't want to always be living in your past. And I know, as much as I do raise awareness about disordered eating, I am very interested in mindset work and self-development and, you know, looking at life beyond and not always having to look back and dig out the past. Definitely that's a huge component of what we absolutely need to do. But I think for my own safety, my own well-being, it's not just about always fixating on that. It's about my long distance running, about my ridiculous collection of books, about my degree. I've just started my master's in sports psychology because I have a really huge fascination with athlete well-being. I love going to cafes and meeting my friends, and it's making sure that there's that balance. As much as I am Lara Becker, this advocate, I'm also just Lara, who is a 23-year-old trying to figure life out and have failed relationships, as we've just had a little chat about.
And Lara Becker that gets dumped. Which, sorry if that was too raw to say, but I just couldn't not say it. Yeah, and I think that's the thing, isn't it? It is having that balance. And I think this is something that I wanted to talk to you about. And I gave you like a little order of things, and actually let's just throw it out the window. But I guess one thing that is, I find so important, and one thing I really wanted to talk to you about today, was identity. And I think you've kind of opened a really nice conversation there in terms of that balance. Because I think often we go from having an eating disorder and our identity being the eating disorder, because ultimately you don't have the energy for anything else to be part of your identity because it absorbs everything. And I've seen a lot of people, and I was one of these people, which I do believe is why I've relapsed, their identity becomes that they're recovered and they don't have anything else. So have you had experience of that? And then, you know, you have now got that balance. So how did you work towards getting a balanced life?
I actually had a conversation with a friend recently about recovered being quite to the point, and I said, I don't identify as somebody that's recovered from an eating disorder. I am somebody that has had experience of disordered eating, and I'm now in a far better place of regulating it. I'm fortunate that I've not engaged in a thought or engaged in behaviors, but I wonder if the coping mechanisms and the healthy kind of mindset I have now, there's going to be moments where there's an uncertainty, or when I go traveling, I'm like, oh, I wonder what food's going to be like. It's still like a thought in the back. And I've never really felt comfortable saying recovered, but that doesn't mean that I'm in a very, very positive place in my recovery. Like, I am leaps and bounds beyond the place that I was 5 years ago, which fuels me with enthusiasm and excitement. But I wonder if this label of recovery is even more pressure because, as we mentioned, perfectionism is so highly associated with the concept of disordered eating. So if we're not perfect in that recovered, you know, label, then we just give ourselves grief. If we have one moment of a natural human emotion where we feel like we read a calorie on a menu and get a bit stressed about it, or if we have a body image wobble when you see your reflection, you know, unexpectedly, and it's like, I'm not sure if I like that, and I feel a bit weird about it. You know, these things come and go because they were so ingrained, it's natural. So I think having that level of acceptance and having that level of self-appreciation and self-compassion to know that we're on this positive path of recovery, but we also can have natural human emotions. You know, suffering disordered eating and eating disorder tendencies, they aren't something that just happens for one Tuesday and vanishes the next week. It's something that's deeply rooted, ingrained. So it's just respecting that as well. And it's just being rational and realistic with yourself. So there's definitely a balance and a fine line with it.
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it, because I think if you took a like random Joe Bloggs on the street and you said to them, let's say, you know, have you ever had an eating disorder? They say no. And then you say, have you ever had a disordered thought about your body? Or have you ever felt uncomfortable about your body? Or have you ever felt uncomfortable about eating something, or, you know, questioned what you're eating? I'd imagine like 99.9999999% of people would say yes.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Yeah. And so to expect yourself to go from food, body, and exercise completely consuming your everyday life to then never having a negative thought again, that in itself, to me, like you're saying, is a lot of pressure and very, very unrealistic.
I have friends that have never really struggled severely with eating disorder, like have never really had it, but you can see that they've had moments of insecurity and they've had moments of the self-esteem wavering in and out within these contexts. And, you know, I've got a little sister in a private school, and there's already conversations regarding body image and things. And, you know, it's just things that you are inevitably going to be exposed to, specifically within this 21st century. And social media, perfectionism, you know, these unrealistic highlight reels. It's something that regardless of an illness or a diagnostic, we're all susceptible to and we're all vulnerable to. Mm. So it sounds sucky. Like we have to surrender to it at some point that we're going to feel a bit wobbly every now and then. But as long as we remember that we've come far and we are going to continue going further. So it's having realism, having self-compassion, being resilient, but then also knowing that it's okay to have a wobble every now and then, because sometimes I know when I've had quote unquote wobbles with my mental health, or I've had a depressed day or a panic attack, the grief I give myself after that is worse than the initial feeling, because you bully yourself for not being perfect, for not being the advocate that's supposed to be perfect and supposed to have all their shit together. Apologies for my French. But yeah, it's knowing that things aren't always perfect and that's okay.
Yeah.
And it's fine saying that in hindsight, because when you're in it, sometimes it's a bit more difficult.
Yeah, just be okay with it.
Yeah, it's fine.
I think there's like two things that come to mind from what you've just said. One is that when you do have that negative thought, I think for me, recovery and the recovery process is, okay, let's say you're having a bad day, you have a negative body image thought, is how you then respond to that. Like, do you then follow down the path of your previous behaviors and do whatever you used to do because you had that negative thought?
Or it's like, may as well go in. Let's just go in for it this time. Yeah. It's
or
like a binge.
Do you have a healthy response to that of, oh, you know, actually, I recognize right now that I don't really feel very comfortable in my body, but what's that telling me? Is that telling me that like I had a disagreement with somebody earlier and that's made me feel shitty about myself? Or like, did I not quite do something right at work and now I'm feeling shitty about myself? And that to me is recovery, is being able to cope in a more healthy way rather than turning towards the eating disorder.
Yes, yes. And it's being able to unpack it, and it's being able to rationalize emotions, and it's being able to just sit with thoughts and take a step back and understanding what are the roots here? Why do I feel this way? And not just responding immediately to that anxious thought, to that worry, to that apprehension, and really kind of sitting with it and thinking a little bit more deeply with yourself. And I think that's why reflection is so important, why journaling is so important, why speaking up is so important. You know, sometimes I'll call my dad. I'm like, right now, I want you to say absolutely nothing. I'm just going to talk to you because I'm going to go through this really weird brain process of like throwing emotion at you and throwing information, and then it's going to help me process things.
Yeah.
Because you need to file a fax it in your head.
Yes.
So yeah, I think recovery is a huge step in self-awareness and understanding yourself. And it's not just letting the eating disorder control you, it's taking control over it. I think that's a huge component of it. Absolutely.
Mm. Yeah. And it all sounds brilliant in like hindsight, sounds, you know, sounds wonderful in like, you know, oh, recovery is, you know, responding in a healthy way and doing things that support yourself. But I'm pretty sure somebody is sat at home going, that's really cool that you can do that. But I'm currently in the depths of my eating disorder. So I know that it's not just as simple as do this and therefore be okay. But how did you begin that journey of going from constantly relying on eating disorder behaviors to now being where you are and being able to reflect and acknowledge when maybe things aren't quite how they should be and putting in place healthier behaviors?
It's taken years. I think that even though I was officially clinically discharged January 2017, I think it's only until like a year or two after that, that my authentic recovery began, because there's a difference when you fit the BMI criteria and when you fit the psychological criteria of feeling that you're more in control. So a big component of me was just accepting the reasons as to why I started developing those anxious tendencies and thus disorder tendencies. You know, my story is unique and, you know, hearing about it isn't really good for anyone, but once you kind of take the time to truly reflect on it, no matter how uncomfortable, no matter how confronting it is, or embarrassing it is, or intimidating it is, it's once you take that step and take the moment to reflect and appreciate, okay, what are truly the underlying psychological reasons as to why I feel like this way of behavior is normal to me. It definitely took that medical intervention for me to make that step and make that awareness, because they kind of force you out of the routine and you start thinking more rationally. So I think it was only when they intervened that I was therefore able to think a bit more rationally about my headspace as well. But it's just taking that step of acknowledgement, and journaling was really helpful, really trying to like knuckle down. I had one book, yes, about daily reflections, but I had another book that was just, you know, what recovery will allow and this and looking at all the optimistic side of things and trying to think about what the eating disorder has taken away from me and what therefore I will gain from it, and thinking about it more optimistically. You know, you're in a really dark headspace, so sometimes that way of thinking can't be easy. But it was just reconnecting with family on a deeper level, playing with sisters, playing with my new dogs. And then you start realizing the life that you've lost. You know, we adopted new greyhounds and I wasn't allowed to take them on the first few walks because I was bedbound. So when I was given the green flag to say, you can actually take them to the park that's right outside your front door and do one lap and come back, I was amazing because, oh, I finally get to take Carrie and Razzle out for their first little walk. So, yeah, I think it's just patience, but acknowledging the deep-rooted stuff too. And then just knowing that it's not ever going to kind of end. It sounds bad, but it's always a continuing process. You learn, you unpack more, you gain more skills, you gain more healthier coping mechanisms, you add more tools to your toolbox. But it's about acknowledging the underlying psychological things and ensuring that your environment is one that's facilitative of recovery and not debilitating it, which is very difficult regarding your circumstance. But it's probably the most impactful thing that you can do to yourself if your influences around you aren't encouraging it's never going to work out.
Yeah. I think what you were saying there about trying to acknowledge things that you're missing out on, what I found with that was I kind of, when I would do that, I would think about the massive things. I'd be like, you know, I can't even think of an example, but I'd go to like the end of the line basically, and then I'd think, well, realistically, is life that bad without, you know, maybe being able to go, yeah, say like to a 10 course taster meal that's like £1,000 to eat the food. Like, that'd be a great experience. We'd get all dressed up and that'd be cool. But like, that's not something that's happening on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah.
But it was when I started thinking about, or like, not even thinking, it was when I started recognizing, like, oh, I'm not able to give my boyfriend a kiss the first time, like the first moment he wakes up in the morning, because I'm already out of bed because I've gone to exercise. And that's a daily thing. And I was missing out on that connection. Or like, I'm not able to, I don't know, sit and eat breakfast with my boyfriend because he wakes up later than me and I've got a set time that I need to eat and all of that sort of thing. When I started to actually unpack those things and those little things that I was missing out on all the time, I then started to think, this is actually having a massive impact on my life because yeah. every element of my life is being impacted, rather than just thinking about the bigger picture things of, oh, I can't currently go to the Ritz for like afternoon tea because it's not something that happens every day, so I'm not bothered by it.
It's bringing it back to your experience and your life. And then when you focus on how those ritualistic behaviors, they've become so ritualistic and so habitual that it's so automatic. Mm-hmm. You don't realize it. So once you do bring awareness to it, and how, you know, I wasn't able to play with my little sisters, or how I wasn't properly able to go to high school and have that teenage experience and go to house parties, I, you know, would stress about going on holiday, like all these things. And but then when you think of the flip side and you come where you are today, and I know that, oh my gosh, I was able to take my sister out on a scooter, mm-hmm. and that's something I couldn't have done. Or how my parents say, oh, we're going for dad's birthday meal. I'm not stressing about, where are we going? I need the menu. I need to make this. It's like, okay, cool. Send me the dress. I'll be there. Or, you know, when you realize on the flip side of what you are now gaining, and the experiences that you're able to have and the opportunities that you're not missing out on. Again, the little ones. It's the little ones that really do hit home, that make it all very special.
How do you, because I think it's lovely, obviously, now that you can say, like, I am able to go out for dinner for my dad's birthday and not even think about it. How do you look after yourself compassionately about the things that you did miss?
Gosh, it's funny because I think I've subconsciously just accepted that I lost my teenage life to it, and I know that means that I've not had like high school relationships or high school friendships, and you know, people, they reconnect post university, and I'm not really part of that group because I was the odd one out. I went to a different school because there was a bit of bullying and there was a bit of drama, and it wasn't an environment I was really wanting to be in. And it meant that I missed that like developmental stage of going to house parties and experimenting with alcohol and like partying. And I had to grow up really quickly. But I think I don't mourn it. I think I really respect the place where I am today. Okay, the fact that I don't drink and I'm not interested in alcohol, is that because of that? Yeah, fine, actually, I'm fine that I don't drink. You know, it means I can spend more money on coffee. Who cares? And I think I've just accepted it. I think I've grown up really quickly. You know, I've had divorced parents as well, and I had a bit of a turbulent personal life. So I think I've just grown to accept that that bit just didn't really happen for me, but life now is pretty snazzy. Like, I've got really cool people around me, and the friendships I have, they're not high school friendships, but I have, you know, a really small handful of really close, good eggs. And that's great. And in all fairness, although I've lost some experiences, I think it made me respect the ones that I have now. Mm-hmm. You have a far deeper level of gratitude because you know that everything you're experiencing now is like your second chance. Like there was a potential that, you know, you couldn't, you know, I could have lost my life. So to know that that didn't happen, it means that everything is just a bit more sweeter on this side.
Mm. Yeah. I was just really interested because I think a lot of the time people are like, oh, you know, with my eating disorder, I missed out on this, that and the other. And I think you're so right in that the only thing that you can actually do and for it to be a positive like influence on you is to just accept that it's happened. Like,
it's funny because I don't think I've done it consciously. It's you asking that, that I've actually only properly thought about it.
Can you do about it? You can't do anything about the fact that it's happened. You know, I think that you could sit here and you could think, oh, you know, it's really upsetting that I wasn't able to have those teenage experiences and all of that. But ultimately, and this may be a very kind of weird way of looking at it, but the experiences that we have as a teenager, let's say, are the experiences that make us a person that we are today. So yes, you maybe didn't have the fun experiences, or, you know, the quite embarrassing experiences of, you know, getting drunk at a house party or whatever, but you had your own experiences, and that's what's made you the person that you are today. So I think my perspective of it is, yes, it's sad that maybe you missed out on some things that a teenager should experience, but then you wouldn't be who you are now. So
yeah, and I think obviously there's a subconscious protective. You don't want to waste energy on negatively reflecting on something that you inevitably cannot change. But it meant that, you know, the relationship with my dad just got blinking amazing, and we watched so many episodes of Big Bang Theories and made so many cups of tea. You know, there was a lot of things that came positively from it, and I'm far more grounded as a person. I'm definitely not somebody to follow a crowd. I'm very much a individual person. You know, in university, I'm not with a group. I am my own person. I'm very independent. I now do everything solo, and, you know, happily go to restaurants by myself and cafes by myself and travel by myself. But I know some people that were struck and conformed into a group. They're unable to leave that unit. They can't be their own person. So potentially, you know, looking at the more advantageous and the more positive side of it, did it just teach me to be my own self without feeling like I need to conform to a social norm? I don't feel I need to get peer pressured into drinking or peer pressured into late night, you know, clubbing. Like, leave me to my Great British Bake Off evenings, please. That's so true as well. There's no actual joke in that.
Yeah, no, I don't doubt it.
I'm currently rewatching old seasons when I wait for the new episode of the new season to come out. There's that level of commitment going on. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like re-watching. There's just there's comfort and predictability. Hey, but you know, yeah. Coming back to it is, yeah. Although missed out opportunities, but I think I took positives from it.
Yeah. Something I have said quite a lot, and George always says this to me, is, you know, the experiences that we've had, yeah, they were pretty crap, but never met people that are so self-aware. Like, Jesus Christ. Like, it's so funny. Sometimes I'll be in my therapy sessions and I'll be like, yes, I did this thing, and obviously that wasn't that great, but, you know, I did it because of this and that and the other. And my therapist is just like, okay. So we're very self-aware that happened. That wasn't great. What do you want from me? And I think that's, for me, it's the biggest part, is that I'm able to really know what's going on with myself. And I look at some people and, you know, I don't pity them or whatever, but I'm proud of the fact that I've been able to build those qualities to be so self-aware and to be able to work through things on my own and know what my emotions mean, rather than being so disconnected from them. And like you said, doing things because I'm following a crowd or whatever. Like, I very much, when I don't want to do something, will just say, and I don't care if people are like, well, that's a bit rude. Like, you know, obviously I'm not going to be like, you know, a massive group of people want to go out for dinner, and I'm just gonna, well, going out for dinner is probably a bad example, want to go to a music show. I literally can't think of an example that's but you know what I mean? When you're
good,
like,
cabaret, darling.
When it's annoying for somebody to not want to do something, I wouldn't be like that. But, like, you know, if I don't want to do it, then I'm like a self-secure enough person that I don't need to do it just to please other people. But that's hard. That's really, really hard to recognize. And I think the reason I asked you about, like, you know, mourning the time that you've lost to the eating disorder is because I think it is really hard to not mourn it, because you, yeah, you can think about, oh, I've missed out on that. But the way that I'm trying to spin it myself now, well, because I'm still in recovery myself. I mean, like you said, I think we're always in recovery, but I feel like I'm in that initial stage. Mm. Is, okay, we missed out on X, Y, and Z. Let's not miss out on future things.
Oh my God. Okay, this is, yes. So as much as we've had this, you feel like you lose things and you mourn things, I think I'm a little bit more juicy about it, because I don't know if juicy was the right word. Bitter, that's the one.
It's because
I came out of it, and it's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to spread my wings. I'm going to go meet people. I'm going to go make mistakes. I'm going to go date people. I'm going to go figure myself out. And then it's like, oh, right, March 2020. And you're like, for God's sake, yeah, we were just trying to go. So, you know, so there's a bitterness because I've lost life to personal issues, to anorexia nervosa and COVID-19. And then I've not had a true, authentic university experience. Like, I missed out on freshers. I missed out on meeting people. I was in a house on campus, but I had to leave after 2 months, and I literally lived by myself. And there's a lot that's been missed out. But also because I don't really know what I have missed, because I'm so used to the latter. I'm just used to it. But in saying that, since coming out of, one, an eating disorder, and two, a global pandemic, I'm not going to lie, the past 2 years have been the best years of my life. Mm-hmm. And I started solo traveling last year, and I've met amazing people. I've been to incredible places. I've properly pushed myself out of my comfort zone. I went from not going away for 5-6 years to going dirt biking the Moroccan desert with somebody that I never met.
Nice.
Joss. You know Joss too, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
is that
yeah,
what you met?
So we've known each other for a few years, and she's like, it's my 30th birthday, do you want to meet in Morocco? So I was like, sure thing.
Wow.
And I hadn't left, like, so that was a big jump for me. And then 2 weeks after that, I went solo backpacking around Italy for my 22nd birthday. And I was terrified because I'd never gone to an airport by myself. I've never navigated a city by myself. And, you know, it was quite a long time. I went to quite a few different cities. And after that first wobble, I had the best experience of my life. And it's like, you live again. Mm-hmm. I'm not surviving anymore. There's no baseline existence. This is me living. This is me seeing Michelangelo's David. This is me eating focaccia and watching sunsets on Piazza Michelangelo and seeing the, you know, the landscape of Florence light up in the sunset. This is me, like, having, like, 24-hour relationships with a really cute guy from Ohio, and he bought me roses, and, like, meeting amazing people on Renaissance walking tours, and, you know, going to Rome, and going to Lucca, and exploring Tuscany, and go to Pisa, and then I kept going. I did Edinburgh, and then I went to Budapest, and Bratislava, and then I went to Vienna and Germany, and yes, it was about going to these places, but it was about the discovery in myself. Mm-hmm. And the amount of excitement was just like no other. And that's the bit where I sat on top of the Gellert mountain in Budapest. And I saw the Danube, and I looked out, and I was like, I'm at a really good place.
Yeah.
Like, I'm here, I'm exploring, I'm living. I was just Lara. Like, again, about the identity. I wasn't a student. I wasn't a podcast host. I wasn't an advocate. I wasn't somebody with anorexia. I was just a curious 22-year-old exploring the world. Mm-hmm. And that was enough. for the first time in my life, I felt enough. Like, my hair was greasy. I was carrying 15 kilo backpacks, working my way through hostels and probably looking exhausted and in need of a good dose of deodorant. But you just feel amazing. So I feel like, although I've missed a lot of life, I've come out of it at a relatively young age. Mm-hmm. And I take that with a lot of gratitude. So to have the opportunity to be able to take advantage of life now, because I haven't been able to previously, I'm taking it and just absolutely running with it. And I'm still young. And yes, I have missed a few years, but I've got a whole lifetime to take advantage of all the weird and wonderful experiences to come.
Yeah. And I think that's what the really special mentality is that you have, and that shift that I think you see in people is sort of going from, oh, I've missed out on all of that, to what has the world got to offer? Because, you know, yes, you've missed a few years or whatever, but don't let the next few years be missed out on because you're mourning the previous things. And I think what you were saying about you, like, I love that phrase so much, like, living, not surviving. Because when we have an eating disorder, it can, you are living, and I think you can very much, you can survive. And for so long, I was in a place where I was able to do my job, I was able to hang out with my friends, I was able to do X, Y, and Z. But there comes a point where you cannot do all of that and balance an eating disorder. And I think that's the point when you have to decide, okay, am I going to recover from this, or am I going to keep just existing, basically? Because right now I'm a shell of a person, and that's all I'm doing is just existing. But then, you know, you go from that very singular label of anorexic. And I've always been like, oh, you know, I don't want a label, I don't want that on me. But actually what I've now decided is, yes, I do want labels, but I want loads of labels. I want to be, you know, I want to be the person that works in marketing. I want to be the crazy cat mum. I want to be the really good friend. I want to be the person that loves traveling. Like, it is okay to have labels, but I think you have to have a lot of labels so that you're not just fixated on one thing. Because I would say, if I was just the crazy cat mum, that probably wouldn't be healthy, because I'd only spend time with cats. If I was just the person who works in marketing, that wouldn't be very good, because all I did was my job. If I was just the good friend, that's not very good, because I'm not thinking about anybody else and all I'm doing is my friends. If I'm just the girl who likes going to the gym, also not healthy. But having all of them, that's a life. Like, that's
having a little sprinkle.
Yeah,
I think that's so important. Like, even so, my sports psychology side is going to come through. But we have an issue with sometimes athletes exclusively labeling themselves as an athlete, because what if an unexpected catastrophic injury happens and then the career is over? They are so tightly consumed by this athletic identity, they don't know themselves outside of it. So you feel lost, you go in this depressive cycle. And as you say, you're a daughter, I don't know if you have a sister, you have all these different, hats and labels and identities and places where you thrive. And I like the fact that although I'm a student, I do have other things going on in my life, because I am very much all in, all out. Mm-hmm. I am very much committed to everything that I do. Sometimes to the point where it becomes unhealthy. Like, I'm balancing it better now, but when I started my undergrad, I was so heavily consumed by academic anxiety and perfectionism in the academic context. I'd have so many panic attacks, so I'd get so stressed. Fortunately, now I'm in a better place, because I'm kind of used to, like, the routine, and I'm in the same university, so there's familiarity. But being able to kind of nod to different things and have a breather to one and open another. It's not about spreading yourself thinly. It's just having more characteristics. Like, I like to be a pianist. I like to be the person that enjoys reading in the corner of the room. I like knowing that I can delve into academic literature, but then I know that I can then, you know, take time to go walk the greyhounds and be a crazy dog person. So I'm a dog, a cat, not a cat.
Oh, damn it.
And the person that collects far too many Monstera's and kills them all. so I'm that as well as a travel enthusiast and a long distance runner and somebody who's really trying to get into calligraphy, you know.
there's
random things. So yeah, I think it's good because then you have the different identities and the different things that represent like creativity and outlet and exploration and balance. And as long as they're good for you, that's all we need.
Yeah. I think what it's about is having lots of different things so that if one of them isn't accessible, there's other things to do.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, with an athlete, if they then can't do sport, well, that's okay because they, you know, have all these other things. Or, you know, you're a good friend.
Backup plan.
Not even a backup plan, just having them already there. Because then it's, I think if you have them as like a backup, it's then like there is change and that's kind of obvious. But if you already have them in your life, it's like, okay, well, for now we can't do that one thing, but that's okay because I've got all these different elements that I can lean into. But with an eating disorder, it just takes over all of them and you don't have those other things to lean into because it just completely encapsulates you. So then when it comes to recovery, it's like, okay, you've got to now throw out that one and you've now got to bring in all these brand new things. And so then you've got the process of learning new things and you're already trying to be a perfectionist at everything, so that's just shit. But then you've got to take out this massive thing. And so I don't know whether this is controversial, but I very much am of the opinion that it needs to be a stepped approach. And so rather than just taking the eating disorder and throwing it out the window, just takes a little thing out and replace that with something and do it gradually, because we all like familiarity, like you said. And so by absolutely stripping it out, I guess for some people it might need to be the rip off the band-aid. But
yeah. Well, at the end of the day, you don't just wake up with it, you know.
Very true.
You can't expect it to come to an abrupt halt.
Yeah.
Because for me, and I'm sure many people could relate, it's just a small behavior that then adds on to another one and adds on to another one.
Mm-hmm.
And then it manifests.
Yeah.
And it's quite a sinister manifestation because it happens so slowly, you don't realize it. And as you said, it becomes subconscious, some of those behaviors or some of those tendencies that you develop. So if these things developed just gradually, but to an extent, then you realize years down the line, oh, we're in a pickle here. Don't expect to have a magic potion and then it vanish. You know, you've got to come back down realistically too, because if we go black to white, that's where lapses happen. If you take consideration, and again, that notion of self-compassion and knowing that we've got to be kind to ourselves, and it's not something that we're going to wake up and it's going to be gone. It's just stripping it back. Like, I hate to make a Shrek reference, but like an onion.
Love
it.
We
are layered. All going to have layers, as well as us little complicated beings.
Yeah. Shades of grey. I always say, my therapist is always like, I'm like, oh, so I did this thing and then I did this thing. And she's like, well, where was the shade of grey in that, Hannah? Like, well, it wasn't. It was white and then it was black. And that's not the way to approach things. But yeah, I feel like that was really insightful. And I feel really motivated from that to go and
go on Skyscanner and book a travel judge.
Oh no, please don't, because I just got back from, I went to Colombia in July and I've just got back from Indonesia and Tenerife and I'm like, I just want to go on holiday
again.
Okay,
I've not done Asia yet, so.
Ooh. Yeah, I didn't really want to not go to Asia, but it just was like, because as a child we'd always gone to America. I was like, America, Canada and Europe, that's like my vibe. And then going to Indonesia, I'm now like, oh my god, like Vietnam, Thailand, Malaysia, Australia.
Don't, 'cause I just started a master's degree and all I wanted to do was go out there for 6 months and go through the islands and go to Laos and go to Indonesia. And
when you get to Indonesia,
I recently came back from Tunisia and I read Eat, Pray, Love, and I was like, oh my god, I need to go.
Yeah. Well, when you do go to Indonesia,
I'll be asking recommendations.
Go to Gilyear, because honestly, most beautiful place in the world. Like, I can't even describe it. It's unreal.
I'm going to put it into Google now as we speak.
Yeah. I saw 8 turtles in an hour when I went snorkeling. And Dory and Nemo and loads of tangs and an octopus.
Oh, they came from Australia to see you.
Yeah, I know.
It's so considerate of them.
I know. Right. Well, we've very much gone off track, but I do think that that's a really nice way to end it, because for me, my travel in Indonesia has kickstarted my recovery. I was
I'm really struggling beforehand. Congratulations. Yeah.
And going there was just like, yeah, we got to do this now. So thank you so much. That time has gone so quickly. I can't believe
it.
I feel like we've just like completely just chatted like two little friends, having a nice little catch up, even though we've never met. Where can people find more of you?
Oh, I feel like I ask this to people and I wonder why they stall, and now I'm stalling.
I don't know what I do.
You know, who am I? I am on, wow, majority of platforms, but it's Lara Rebecca on Instagram and Twitter.
Hello,
it's Lara
and
double
welcome
underscore
to the
Rebecca.
Full of Beans podcast is hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience with eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself and reflect on these conversations.
So that ceases to exist, but no, it's the podcast and the Instagram that I tend to promote the most content. So yeah,
well, thank you so much. I very much look forward to when the Masters is done, seeing all the travel that goes on, because I imagine it's gonna be
so much
amazing.